This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad to be with you today. And we've got a very interesting first guest, an author. Brian O'Leary is joining us. He's written a book called Spygate, The Untold Story. I know many of you heard and remember Spygate. That was New England Patriot got caught red-handed cheating in the NFL. Like cheating would ever go down on in the NFL. But we'll talk with him about that and why he decided to write the book and all the history behind it, because, you know, a lot of things came out in Spygate in the book that I've seen. But during the time it came, during the time that was being talked out, we didn't hear a lot about Spygate and why it happened. And I want to just find out, why did it happen and why did New England get away with it so long? So let's bring in our guest, Brian O'Leary. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hey, okay. Glad you're with us. And yeah, I just want to know, why did you think that New England got away with it for so long? You know, people, they didn't hear a lot about it when the story first broke out, and yet they were able to get away with it. And of course, eventually, they got a pretty light fine. So if you can, give us a little bit of detail on why all that happened, you think.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you asked the question in that way. When I first started doing research, it was really just out of curiosity as a fan, and I was very surprised to learn that no one had written a book about this.
Yes.
You would think it's a very juicy topic. You've got conspiracy, lies, tape. You've got possibly three stolen Super Bowl trophies. And as I dug for more and more information, I was literally amazed at how much information the general fan didn't have. There's a lot of information that I reveal in the book that most people are shocked to learn. And I can only guess that a sports reporter would not want to bite the hand that feeds it. So an industry insider, maybe a famous sports reporter, wouldn't want to touch this topic for fear of embarrassing the NFL and maybe being, you know, blackballed or ostracized by the NFL down the line.
Yes, and it seemed like that certainly that could happen. But, you know, I was also surprised they got such a light fine. Why do you think they also just got basically a slap on the wrist?
Well, I think that the NFL was caught up in a conflict of interest, and the conflict of interest is between Roger Goodell and the owners and then catching a cheater in the way they did. The owners and the commissioner have a $9 billion a year business. If they punished the Patriots too severely, then the public would have been made aware that this was a very serious cheating scandal that most likely affected the outcome of games, which would cause there to be a tainted Super Bowl, you know, three Super Bowl trophies that people would be suspicious of, and people would have the ability to possibly sue. You know, if you gambled and lost in bets against the Patriots, you could go to the casino and recover. The commissioner came out and said that this system caused them or helped them to win Super Bowls. There would have been a financial tsunami that could have seriously hurt the NFL. So they had to walk a fine line between appearing to be tough but not being too tough. And, of course, they came out and said, we don't think this had much of an effect on the games. And then they mysteriously destroyed all the evidence.
Yeah.
So, you know, the signs of a cover-up were obvious, but I think they had a very difficult decision to make, how to be tough but not too tough, because, as I said, their official position was that it didn't really affect the outcome of games.
Now you probably know most people out there, people like me and other announcers and just people in general, think, well, it's no big deal because it happens all the time in the NFL. They've always been cheating.
Right.
And yet, you know, they've taken this to another degree. So why do you think that something that's basically known in general by the public that they thought was such an egregious assault that they had to really do something about it?
Well, that's a great point. And a lot of people do point out that this kind of thing has been going on for years. But I think in the case of the Patriots, they took this to a whole nother level. They had, you know, as soon as the punishment was announced, both Chris Mortensen of ESPN and Andrea Kramer came out with reports that said that this taping was just the tip of the iceberg, and that they were also guilty of miking defensive linemen to obtain quarterback audibles and jamming the radio frequencies of opposing coaches' headsets. So imagine this. You're playing the Patriots, and they know your defense. So Tom Brady knows the defensive lineup when he comes to the line of scrimmage. The linebackers know what your quarterback is going to do when he audibles. So Teddy Bruschi looks all pro. And if all of that doesn't stop you, while you're on your winning drive, your coach's headsets are going to go out. Now, does that sound like an everybody does it kind of thing? Or does that sound like they took it to a way of life where it was win at all costs? These are the kind of events, when uncovered, need to be shined a bright light on so that everybody knows that this is exactly what we don't want in our sports teams in America. Someone that has the attitude that we will do anything it takes to win. I don't think this was an everybody does it thing. And of course, this team netted 3 Super Bowls in 5 years with a quarterback that was drafted in the 6th round. So,
and yet, on top of that, you know, Bill Belichick, the head coach and the leader of this organization and things, he was able to basically go about unscathed. How was he able to walk through it and basically, just got a light fine?
Well, yeah, it's amazing. He wasn't suspended for even one game.
Right.
And if you compare that to Sean Payton of the Saints, who was recently suspended for an entire season, there's just no way you can come up with any equitable reasoning behind that. In my opinion, they were so light on Belichick, and had to be for reasons I just mentioned, that they sort of oversteered. They were overly harsh on the Saints just to show that they were top stewards, that they were looking out for the players, that they really were, let's say, tough policemen of the game. And I think Belichick had to get away with murder because, like I said, if the NFL would have said, we strongly believe this assisted them in winning Super Bowls, then there would have been a lot of financial liability that would have come out of that claim. So if you claim that even though the coach clearly cheated, which Goodell has said, he doesn't accept Belichick's explanation of events, and Belichick was warned to stop cheating before he was caught, all of that's in the public record. The fact that they couldn't severely punish him, I think, again, goes to the fact that they had to maintain that it didn't have a big impact on the outcome of games.
And we're talking with Brian O'Leary, the author of Spygate, The Untold Story. And that's the story about the New England Patriots and all their cheating ways. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Now, you listed a man prominently that we never heard of very much, beforehand, Matt Walsh in the very key person. So tell us about Matt Walsh and how he was such an integral part of the whole cheating scandal.
Right. Matt Walsh was a really important figure in this, and he was an ex-employee. By the time they were caught, he had already left the team years prior, but he was a person that was in charge of gathering the tapes and signals. So he was a key part in the criminal activity, let's call it, of obtaining the signals and making sure that they got to the decoder. So when he made himself known, he said, I've got additional tapes. I have information that could be embarrassing to the NFL and the Patriots, and clearly he wanted to talk. So all the NFL had to do was indemnify him because he had a non-disclosure agreement and he didn't want to be sued. So if they really wanted to get to the bottom of it, all they had to do was say, we, the NFL, will never sue Matt Walsh for any reason regarding his employment. But they wouldn't do that. The only reason we ever heard from Matt Walsh is that Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania started to smell something fishy was going on. He knew that the evidence had been destroyed, and he knew that Matt Walsh was out there, and the NFL was in no hurry to speak to him. So he began speaking to the New York Times and other news outlets and saying things like, this is clearly a cover-up. There's no reason why you wouldn't want to hear from a key witness that has evidence in his possession unless you were sweeping this under the rug. And he eventually embarrassed the league and the owners into sitting down with Matt Walsh. But this didn't happen for 4 or 5 months. He wasn't interviewed until March of the following year. And, of course, when he did come forward, he did have additional tapes. He said that the Patriots knew the opposing defenses about 75% of the time. And, like I said, when you read the book, when you see all of the evidence that came in, no logical thinking, unbiased person would conclude that they didn't have an advantage on game day.
Now, how did this help Tom Brady? You know, he came out and, he came out, like you say, is a sixth-round draft choice.
Right.
He became a very good quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Right.
How did this affect him, how did he take advantage of it, I should say?
Well, with the information of knowing your defense is set, the quarterback would have his offensive coordinator call in a play that would work best against that set. So, said in layman's terms, if a specific cover four defense or cover two defense was called, all they had to do was call a play, which would be like a tight end out. So they were always sending receivers into wide open areas. And if you watch tape of the Patriots games back when they were winning all these Super Bowls, you will see a lot of receivers that seem to be wide open. And Tom Brady also is not a scrambler. He doesn't play well when he's hit. He's a system quarterback that seems to be playing a pinball game as he's marching down the field. And everybody sees it on the field, and they say, wow, Tom Brady's an amazing quarterback. But what they don't realize is knowing what your opposing defense is makes all the difference. As a matter of fact, in the book, I quote Steve Young as saying, if I knew what the defense was, that's the whole game.
Oh,
meaning
so, yeah.
The game becomes very easy when you know what your defense is.
Oh, for sure. It does. And so that gave Tom a huge advantage. Even though he came in as a sixth-round draft choice,
right.
His intelligence really probably helped him to figure out, you know, to learn everything that he needed to know. That really helped him because he's such an intelligent player and person overall. That had to be a big advantage for him, didn't it?
Right. And amazingly, in 2007, after they were caught, of course, the public was told that the Patriots would stop cheating and, of course, everybody came to the conclusion that they would never dare to continue to cheat. But in 2008, Tom Brady went down, and he was replaced in the lineup by Matt Castle. Well, Matt Castle is an unusual figure because if you were going to do a statistical study, he would be the ideal person you would want to place in the position. Meaning, if the cheating system mattered, then Tom Brady isn't important as he would. He's not as important as he would be on another team, meaning some other quarterback who was capable could also play well. That would be a theory you would love to test. Well, Matt Castle came in having never started a game in college. Okay, let me say that again. He's the only person known to have not started a game in college as a quarterback and then start a game as a pro in the NFL as a quarterback. And not only did he start a game, he won 11 games that season. And most people don't realize that he actually had a statistical better season than Tom Brady's Super Bowl winning season in 01. So how do two unheralded, unheard of quarterbacks that almost everybody in the NFL passed over 5-6 times in a draft, how do they put up numbers that are Pro Bowl, Hall of Fame, top in the league numbers? Unless there's a systematic advantage built in that allows the New England Patriots to perform at a level that shouldn't be possible. And that's what I lay out in the book. All the facts are in the book.
Now,
do you mind if I tell people where they can buy it?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
You can pick up the book in electronic formats or hardcover at the website spygatebook.com. And you can also buy it on Amazon in hardcover and Kindle versions. And it's selling very well on Amazon. It's moving up the charts as hot new releases.
Oh, that's very good, because, yes, it's an extremely interesting book. I haven't read the whole thing yet, of course, but from everything that I've been going through on it, it's a very good read, no doubt about
Thanks.
That.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and when you look at, when you said about Castle and then about Brady as well, that made me think just, with guys like that who are extremely good, how come you thought they never, or especially Castle, why would he not ever make something like this public, after he got traded to Kansas City? And why, I know Brady's still in New England, but why would Castle not try to shed some light on this?
Well, if you think about it, it is technically possible that Matt Castle didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
All that it requires is for the decoder, Ernie Adams, to change the play to the appropriate play. Then the offensive coordinator, who at that time was Josh McDaniels, all he has to do is relay the play into Matt Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, into Matt Cassel. Now, Matt Cassel could have said, wow, you guys guess right a lot, right? It seems like we're always checking down to the correct play. But it is not absolutely necessary that, given the fact that Matt Cassel was only there for 1 year, that he knew all the details. I would never be so bold as to accuse Matt Cassel of being in on it. It's not necessary that he was. Now, Brady doing it for 6 years, definitely. He definitely had to know. There's just too much that he did right. There's too many records that he broke were mind-blowing. His how few interceptions he has, it's really amazing. And you can see clearly there's a chapter in my book called Why No Love for Brady. And it lays out this chronology of events in 05 where Tom Brady was just coming up on his first opportunity to get a big contract from the Patriots. He had just won him 3 Super Bowls. He was drafted in the 6th round, which makes him the greatest value in NFL history. The guy had made $10 million total for all 3 Super Bowls up to that moment. Michael Vick had just signed a giant contract. Peyton Manning had just signed a giant contract. Without going into details, essentially they were making $14 million a year. Well, Brady wanted to get paid similarly, and Robert Kraft wouldn't pay him. Now, why would you not want to reward the most important person on one of the wealthiest teams in football when they had just done the seemingly impossible? Unless you knew that Tom Brady wasn't really worth the money. Tom Brady eventually signed a contract that paid him $10 million a year, which, ironically enough, was Eli Manning's rookie contract. So Tom Brady wanted to be paid like Peyton Manning, and they paid him like Eli. Now, does that make sense to any of your listeners, why they would shortchange him by 40%?
It shouldn't, that's for sure.
It's highly suspicious, right?
Yes.
I mean, you just saw Drew Brees. He held out almost until the first preseason game.
Yeah.
And you would think that he owed the Saints a lot. They resuscitated his career. And he didn't win them 3 Super Bowls. He held out until he got the most money that any quarterback has ever gotten. Not Tom Brady. He didn't hold out a day. And if he would have held out, the fans would have been in an uproar. They would have forced Kraft to pay him, right?
That's true. They would have.
All he had to do was say, if you're not going to give me Peyton's money, I'm not playing this season. And he would have had a contract in 6 hours. But he didn't. So why did he cave in so easily? Are we supposed to believe a guy who's married to a world-famous supermodel doesn't like money?
Yeah.
Does Tom Brady seem like a country bumpkin to you?
Nope.
Well, then why would he sign a contract that made him get paid $4 million a year less than Michael Vick? Michael Vick had won 2 playoff games. 2.
That's a very good point.
It's crazy. When you think of the old adage, follow the money, mm-hmm. It's never been more true than in this case. If you follow the money behind all of the decisions that are made here, it's very clear what occurred.
Hey, before we let you go, Brian, we'll ask you one more question. With all the coaches coming and going in the league and all the coaches that New England has lost and such, why didn't any of the assistant coaches, you think, even Josh McDaniel, who I think he led on to it a little bit when he was out there in Denver, but
right.
Why didn't he even say more about it?
Well, because they all owe their success to it. Josh McDaniels landed a giant contract to be the head coach in Denver because of the effectiveness of this system. And as you just pointed out, he did mention that the system was very effective, and he thought he was doing it privately to his coaches because he had been caught in Denver trying to recreate the system. So there you have direct testimony from a coach. I believe the quote is, "It's not like we did in New England, where it was practiced, it was coached, it was worked on." I mean, this is an insider who made his living using this system, and he basically outed the Patriots as being run by an organization of cheaters. So, I mean, that's the testimony you just asked for. That's it. He gave it to you.
Okay, the book is Spygate, The Untold Story. It's by Brian O'Leary. Brian, give us a... The addresses where people want to buy it, where they can get it at, one more time.
Okay, thanks. You can get it in all electronic formats. That would be iPad, Nook, Kindle, and hardcover on the site spygatebook.com. And you can get it on Amazon as well.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Brian. Appreciate you being on. If we can, we'll get you back on and talk about it again one more time. But it's a fascinating read. So
I'd
recommend it to anybody.
Let me know once you get done reading it.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah,
bye-bye. And that's Brian O'Leary, the author of Spygate, The Untold Story. So, hey, I'd recommend you, I'm going to finish reading it, but it's a book that's well worth reading. Spygate, The Untold Story, all that cheating that went on during the New England Patriots have done. And it still continued even after they were caught for a while. Very interesting. The time now, 26 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more Storch Talk on AM 870 WKAR.
In Cuba, President Raul Castro says he wants to reform the economy, but progress is slow. The Cuban population is aging and needs services the system can't provide. Young Cubans look elsewhere for opportunities. I'm Tom Gelton. What the future holds for Cuba? Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. Today's high 72 with rain and a chance of thunderstorms. Rain and isolated thunderstorms tonight, a low of 58. For tomorrow, the high down to 69 with rain likely, and cloudy Saturday with a good chance of light rain and a high of 68.
And give us a call. Talk more sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We're going to be talking a little bit later on about Michigan State football and their football team. But first off, let's talk a little bit about the Olympics. Of course, the Usain Bolt will go for the 200-meter championship tonight. We're in the second day of the decathlon. Five events have already been completed. They've started the next day, and it looks like it's going to be a very tough decathlon. Congratulations to Allison Felix last night, who won the 200-meter in her event. So and they had the semifinals of the relays are going on. So I was watching one of the relays events earlier on, the 4x400-meter relay. So we'll have it'll be a lot of Olympics going on, and that's going to be some contests. But the United States is now back in the lead. So as far as the most gold medals and the most overall medals, so they are ahead of China by about four right now. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. More importantly, spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR East Lansing. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on WKAR. And if you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, we're going to talk about the Tigers somewhat. Of course, the Tigers are still in contention. They did lose last night, but they're still in contention to win their division title. Right now, they're the number one team as far as a wild card playoff. No one wants the Tigers to enter the playoffs as a wild card team, because that's just a one-game playoff, and you're done. So they still got a great chance to win the division. I still think they're going to win the division, but it's going to be a challenge for them, that's for sure. Hey, but give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And so the Tigers are still doing very well as a team, even though they lost to the Yankees last night, 10-8. They're in a very, very strong position. So if you want to talk about the Tigers, if you want to talk about the Olympics, or talk about Michigan State, you can do any of those. But give us a call, talk sports with us, right here on AM 870 WKAR. When I'm looking at the Olympics now, and you see it's starting to wind down. But it's still, we've got some very compelling matches going on. You know, everybody, I think everyone who's, if you love track and field, I know you're going to be watching the relays. You're going to be watching Usain Bolt tonight. It's to see if he can duplicate, be the first man since Carl Lewis to win the 100 and the 200 meters back-to-back years. We'll see with that. And Usain Bolt is really a unique athlete. He's got such long legs, and he can get up to such a high speed very quickly. That makes him such a very unique athlete. Hey, and Let's bring Aaron in and talk with Aaron. And I love the relays, Aaron, I got to tell you. When we get to the 400-meter relay and the 100-meter relay, the relays, to me, are one of the most exciting events of all in track and field. I don't know how you feel about them, but I'm really looking forward to those relay races.
Yeah, I mean, they're exciting to watch, to say the least. I mean, you know, the relays, you know, obviously it's a team effort, so you know, it's just not one person that, you know, has to put in the effort. So, you know, if one guy screws up, everyone else can be perfect. And if one guy screws up, well, there goes your shot, you know. So, yeah, you're right. There's certain elements that adds to the race for sure.
Yes, that's going to be some very good races coming up. And the decathlon, I mean, that looks like the Americans are the top two of event players, and it looks like they're going to finish 1-2 the way it's going right now. It looks like they're both leading in their events, and so that's going to be a great race. If you love the decathlon, those are 10 grueling events. You've got 5 each day, and to compete in those 10 events over a 2-day period, you really have to be in great shape to do anything in that, to compete in such a different magnitude of events. You really have to be a great all-around athlete if you do something like that. And let's see, we got some calls coming in, so we're going to get to the calls and we're going to get talk a little bit more about the Olympics, a little bit about the Spartans, and we're going to do that as well right here on AM 870 WKAR. And if you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Let's go to the phones. We've got Dennis on the line. Dennis, how you doing?
Earl, congratulations. That was a hell of an interview, man.
Yeah, that was pretty. I mean, yeah, he's written a heck of a book. I'm still reading it. I haven't gotten even halfway through it yet. But I wanted to get him on because, boy, he lays everything out. I mean, you know, we all knew that he was cheating, that New England was caught red-handed cheating. I mean, they even confessed to it. But they got away. I always wondered why come they never got a big fine or anything like that. I mean, you got caught red-handed, and yet they just slap you on the wrist. That was very surprising to me.
Well, the explanation he gave was so compelling.
Yeah,
I couldn't think of any response that made more sense than that the NFL had too much to lose.
Yeah,
there was liability, not only from Vegas all the way through sponsorships and playoff game results and other team owners. I mean, it would be a tidal wave of litigation.
Oh, without a doubt.
If the NFL came down. And not only that, Earl, I mean, he really indicts and calls into question the careers of Belichick, Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's the starting middle linebacker's name?
Yeah, Dan Brewski.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. it makes you look with a jaundiced eye at the careers of these guys. And well, now that we know that you were cheating, it was more than an uneven playing field. It was mm-hmm. it was slanted to the point that these guys you're playing with almost didn't have a chance. Well, how good of a ball player, how good of a coach are you now?
Yeah.
In retrospect, and you know, Earl, like a lot of other fans, I knew that there's a cheating scandal. I knew they were mm-hmm. using the radio to unfair advantages, et cetera, et cetera. I just didn't think and contemplate the scope and how deep this thing can go until that interview just now. So looks like that's another book I'm going to have to get. One thing I would have asked mm-hmm. if I'd have been in a position to call Earl mm-hmm. is, how does Brady, how do his stats measure up in the years subsequent to the cheating scandal? Because he has had some success. He's taken
the
Super Bowl, been with a player to win in 2 more Super Bowls. And the assumption would be that he's either good enough to win without cheating, or they're still cheating. They're just doing it in a way that they haven't been caught yet.
Yes.
So I would have been real interested to hear his take on that. And you know, maybe next time he's on, you can bring up that question. But again, man, congratulations. That was an outstanding interview, and it sounds like a great read.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of that, you know, when he brought up Matt Cassel and said about him, I mean, here Matt Cassel wasn't even a draft choice, never played a game in college, and you know, or right. and did so well in his first year, had a better year than what Brady had in his first year as a super when he took the year team to the Super Bowl. That really makes you think. I never thought about that in Cassel and on how he developed, and he certainly and he got a big contract out of that. I mean, he was really lifted to another level. Now we're seeing he's probably struggling a little bit in Kansas City, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he looks like a guy that never started the game in college.
Yep.
And you know, his point about Brady not demanding a bigger contract, I can kind of take that two different ways, Earl. Because if I'm part of a conspiracy and my co-conspirator doesn't want to divulge, and I've got the keys to the kingdom, I'm gonna say, look, man. You're gonna pay me what you're paying, what they're paying
right.
Peyton Manning,
yeah.
and damn sure what they just paid my man from Atlanta, the lefty. I'm gonna start talking and spill the beans. So that to me, I don't know necessarily if that's real strong evidence. I could see the argument, but it goes both ways. But overall, I couldn't stop listening closely. That was fascinating, man. Really good conversation. And I wonder how much other media outlets that are married to the NFL, like ESPN, like some of your national newspaper outlets like USA Today, are going to pick up this a book and review it and give it the type of publicity it deserves, because this is a conversation that a sports fan, an NFL fan at least, should be willing to have and should want to know the truth about. So, again, congrats, Joe. I'm really glad you did that.
Yeah, thank you. And one thing he told me when we were talking off the air, he says everything in the book has been documented. He said you can look up everything that he documented in the book. You can find that it's certainly true. It was already reported.
Oh, so. I have no doubt that he did, Earl. I'm anyone who knows me well knows I'm all about the truth, and I know with respect to a lot of areas in our society, politically, medically, historically, we've been lied to, and especially money's involved, people will cover up the truth for their own reasons. So this is just one more you add to the list. So.
Yep.
All right, Earl, I'll talk to you.
Talk to you later, Dennis. Yeah, bye-bye. 37 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. More importantly, though, spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR East Lansing. And, Aaron, what's your thoughts on the book? I should get your thoughts. What was your thoughts on the interview and on Brian O'Leary? He definitely laid it out pretty well, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he seems to lay it out pretty simplistic, logical, from a sports perspective that I think is easy to understand. And you know what? I think he's got some good points. So
yes.
I don't think any of us would...
would divide it or anything.
Right, yeah. I mean, I would have to look at the book exactly, you know, for all the specific facts and, you know, all the stuff he has on there. But... yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds like it's a very interesting book. You know, frankly, they got away with it.
They did get away with it. You're right about that.
Yeah,
they got away with it.
Yep. You know, they got the fines or whatever, you know, they came down on them. But frankly, those, like you said, I wouldn't even say it was a slap on the wrist. It was more like a, you know, a point of the finger kind of deal. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, Robert Kraft paid $500,000 fine on me. What's $500,000 in the NFL? He's one of the richest coaches in the league.
Yeah, that's like a dollar to you and I or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's football. It's a lot of money, and I think Dennis made a good point about, you know, when it comes to a lot of money and something like this, frankly, they just want it to go away so they can continue to make money. I mean, that's the bottom line.
That's true, and they are continuing to make money. And hey, we're helping them do that. We're the public, so we're invested in it just as much as anyone else is. And they're making a ton of money off of football in this country. Hey, give us a call. The time right now is 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Give us a call or stay tuned for more short sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
There's no law in the books that automatically makes disclosing classified information a crime. Some leaks are barred under the Espionage Act, many are not. A new Senate bill addresses that gap, but critics say reporters sometimes need leaks just to do their jobs. I'm Tom Gelton, the media, national security, and leaks. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Look for a high of 72 degrees with rain and maybe thunderstorms today. Rain and isolated thunderstorms overnight with a low of 58. Tomorrow, the high 69 with rain likely. Cloudy on Saturday and a good chance of light rain. Saturday's high in the upper 60s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR East Lansing. Well, let's hear a little bit from some of the Michigan State coaches and players. One coach, Mark Staten, the offensive line coach. And I asked him, it seems like they've gotten more athletic in the offensive line and in general. And I asked him, how is that? Is Michigan State really a more athletic offensive line team? Do you think this might be a more athletic class that you've had than you've had in the past?
On the offensive line, Earl? Yes, on the offensive line, we've got real athletic guys. I don't know more or less, but they just appear to play more athletic, which is what you want. They're out there. They're able to get out there. They're able to run. They're able to stay after. They're able to, when you're a little more athletic, you can stay after guys longer. Things fall on your feet. You might be able to step over it. So that's been really exciting. And, we got a long way to go till Boise State. But so far, the intensity they've come out with these last 3 days, once the shells got on and in today's was the pads, was very exciting. Very exciting.
How long does it take before the guys get a good grasp of pass blocking?
Man, I don't. That's a great question. Earl, let you stump me on that one. I think it's a different person. It clicks eventually. And the one nice thing, we get into the one-on-ones and we do stuff like that, and we'll work twist schemes, things like that. But, truthfully, there's generally four guys rushing, and you've got six guys in the protection blocking. So you've got a lot of help. And that's the thing. They have to understand when to help, where to help, how to help, which way to go. That's big, too. If they go the wrong way, you're in trouble. So I think the scheme part of it right now is what some of these guys, the youngest guys, are still trying to develop. But, we work on it every day. And, anytime you guys are out here, you see they're over there just working on different stuff. And the older guys are coaching the younger guys. So it's the older guys understand the legacy that they leave is with the young linemen they leave behind. So that's exciting. So I'm privileged to be working with these guys.
And that's offensive line coach Mark Staten talking about the more athletic offensive linemen that they have on the team this year. And they've gotten better over the last few years. Well, I had a chance to talk with head coach Mark D'Antonio, and he talked about the incoming, the wideouts they've got. They've really got an outstanding group of wideouts.
Well, I think all of our guys catch the ball very, very well. It's basically, who's going to be able to step up there and learn what they have to do the fastest. I think McGarrett Kings has shown some things as well. Exciting to watch after he catches the football. Trey has made some very good plays down the field, catching the ball, high pointing the ball, and then also Medeiros has been solid. We've seen Kyle Carrick and DeAnthony in the spring, and they're picking up. And, we've seen a day or two of Burbage, so he's got skills. So all those guys are guys that we would recruit over again, and I think they're going to play a lot of football here. But they're young, so they're still learning how to get lined up in the huddle, let alone sometimes, on the field.
And Coach D'Antonio talked about some of the other new players, some of the guys that play linebacker in other positions.
Yeah, Jamal Lyles looks extremely quick in pads and disruptive, and he has power, he has shock. But I think, I look at our guys. I mean, we've got a good recruiting class. The skill guys, I think Nick Tompkins has done some nice things as well. At tailback, extremely quick. He's got a burst, accelerates. Offensive line is tough to say, because they're a ways away from learning. But those would be the guys, you know, like Riley Brollo is a guy that would possibly play as a true freshman, but we'll see. I don't want to just play a guy a couple plays, but he's been active as well.
Well, when I chatted with the defensive line coach, Ted Gill, and he talked about how he loves for all the defensive linemen that come in and play under him to be smart and fast, and they have to be play very fast. So here's what Ted Gill had to say about playing fast.
Thing about, you know, when you got true freshmen, you know, you still got to make them learn all the different things about run and pass. And so with our scheme of things, the thing I preach to them is really getting off the ball and playing hard and fast. If you can play hard and fast in our defense, then we'll correct the other things. Because what I tell them all day long, don't be afraid to make a mistake. As long as you're playing hard and fast and doing the things we ask you to do, we'll get the mistakes corrected along the way.
And then let's hear from a couple of players. Tony LePet, we heard from him, and he's talking about being one of the leaders on the team.
I would say that I kind of like know the system, and I kind of can correct a lot of people, and a lot of people can correct me. I'm not going to say I know anything. I know everything because I don't. I don't say I make all the plays because I don't, because at the end of the day, I kind of know where to be in certain stuff, and if somebody make a mistake or something, I can correct them, and I can say stuff. I get to be time that I usually didn't say stuff last year because I just let it. I just held it in because I didn't feel like it was my role. But now I feel like it's my role to correct young guys and stuff like that, because that opens up my mouth, and I think that's making me better, because I don't want to go out there and make the same mistake. But if I hold it in, I feel like I'll probably make a mistake. So I'll let it out, then I'll write down in my notebook and be like, okay, you know not to make that mistake now. It's like I'm a vigorous learner, because you can learn off other people's experiences and stuff like that. So.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We've got Don from DeWitt. Don, how you doing?
Hey, real good, Earl. How you doing?
Okay.
Going to have to dig into the archives to catch that interview. I missed it. Sounds like a real good one.
It
tuned
was.
In just in time to hear Dennis's comments. And always good to hear Dennis. But, you know, Dennis, you know, some of your truth about the Spartans is a bit of a stretch every now and again.
And everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Dennis is a good fan. Anyway, yeah, just football, Earl. It's almost here, you know, just with practice starting, you can just feel it. My DeWitt boys in a couple weeks, and then the Spartans in three. It's going to be incredible. First of all, do you agree with me that, and thing about it, I moved to DeWitt in 64, and, you know, had great timing as far as the Spartans, obviously, but I was only 9 at the time, so I didn't know, you know, the whole quality of the roster. But do you agree with me that, you know, the Spartan team is as deep as it's been? You know, you'd have to go back to the 60s to find the roster this well-stocked.
Oh, yes, this is the deepest it's been in a long time. I mean, they've got the first two teams are very good. Third and fourth team, when I talk with Mark about that, he says they're just going to be fighting for jobs. He says, you know, he loves the players on the roster, and they're good, and he thinks that once they learn to play, that the system will be even stronger. But yes, he likes this roster. It's very strong, top to bottom, and they think they'll have good depth in third and fourth string guys. So hopefully we won't have to get to see that during a game, but you know they're comfortable right now. Once those guys learn what they have to do, that they'll be very successful here at Michigan State.
Well, obviously you can't have key people like Andrew Maxwell go down.
Right.
You'd hate to see a few other players go down, but for once. Finally, the player they're plugging in, they're just not much of a drop-off at all.
Right.
I mean, you talk about guys like Tyquan Hammock, Darian Harris, and I forget the other bat, Tywan Jones as backup linebackers, and they could start for an awful lot of Big Ten squads.
Oh, yes, and that's one thing I've noticed. The backups are such high quality. And like you say, they've got very good backups, especially at the line. They're so deep at the linebacker position, that's for sure. But, you know, they've got a lot of quality players in the program, and more so than any other time in their history. So, you know, they're just going to have a good, solid program. Let me play a couple more cuts for you. I've got a couple from D'Antonio and from Connor Cook as well. So we'll play those. Thanks a lot as well, Don. So we'll talk to you a little bit later, buddy.
Hey, you going to be at Jack's signing tonight?
Yeah, I'll probably just stop in there and let him throw a couple of haymakers at me. He's already said he's going to get me a little bit, so I'll probably stop in there.
We'll see you there. Just slobbering in anticipation of Jack's book.
Okay.
I've got the others, and he's a great writer. Nobody does it better.
Yep, okay.
Great show, Earl. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Don. Yes, let's hear from Mark D'Antonio talking about Connor Cook.
I've seen a lot of focus. He has very, very good command of the offense. He's been here for a while, been in the same system. He's just real comfortable in the pocket, got a strong arm, and he's very accurate.
Okay, that was Connor Cook, and he was talking about Andrew Maxwell. That's what he was doing. Now, do we have another cut that's just called Cook, and that's by D'Antonio, right? Okay, so let's bring in, hear what Connor Cook has to say about getting better, or but D'Antonio says about Connor Cook getting better as a quarterback.
He's much more established this summer camp than he certainly was last year as a freshman, and he is he's bigger than he was even, you guys probably tell as well as I can, but he's bigger. I think he's closer to 6'4", maybe even a little bit taller than that now, 220 plus. He's got more of command in the huddle. He throws the ball great, and you know he's moving very well. So I think he's grown a lot over the course of spring and summer.
And that's Connor Cook. I mean, that's what Mark D'Antonio says about Connor Cook. And here's what Cook has to say. He's just out competing for the best to be the number one QB.
I've seen a lot of focus. He has very, very good command of the offense. He's been here for a while, been in the same system. He's just real comfortable in the pocket, got a strong arm, and he's very accurate.
And give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Spread the word around, though. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR in East Lansing. And Aaron, so we've covered, are we done or do we have any cuts left? Okay, so we're done with all the cuts there. Okay, so we'll have more for you next week. For sure. So we'll do that, and we'll have more for you later on Sports Talk 870. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. As you know, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And just spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR. And if you want to read it, I hate to say it, but I guess I shouldn't say I hate to say it. Jack Ebling has written another book called The Best of the Spartans. And, you know, if he's going to be having a book signing, and he'll probably be selling books tonight. It takes place from 7 to 10 or 6 to 9 over at this afternoon. So if you want to go and get a copy of the book, you can do that over at Reno's East. And if you want to get a copy and get a copy signed, Best of the Spartans by Jack Ebling. So go do that. And we've got a lot of things going on in the Olympics still going on, a lot of different arena venues. Have you seen anything on the scorecard on what's anything going on in the Olympics right now, Aaron?
Nothing. I haven't checked in a little bit here, but as you mentioned earlier, the medal count I think is I think U.S. has that locked.
It looks like they've did a strong comeback there and to get the lead. Now let's go to your sport. Let's go to golf. How is Tiger doing? I know he was a little bit. He's not doing too badly in this first round, but his first round's got to be pretty close to the end, isn't it?
Yeah, he actually just finished up his round. He's 3-under for the tournament so far, just the first day. So a lot of stuff can happen in a championship. But unfortunately, the leader is 8-under.
Wow. That's a tough course they're playing on, too.
Yes,
that's a really
it
tough
is.
Course.
Yeah, I mean, you got wind to deal with, and it's a tough course to begin with, so... Luton, I believe, is his name, is 8-under par, but I got a feeling he's probably not going to stay there. Usually on the first day, there's usually always a couple guys get at the top, and then after that, they usually plummet for whatever reason. So, but at 2 o'clock, I mean, you still got Mickelson to tee off. You got Davis Love III and Harrington to tee off at 2 o'clock yet. So that leaderboard could change for all we know. But, Tiger's in a championship. as long as you're shooting under par and you're a couple shots away from the leader, granted, you know, 8-3 is a big difference, but you know, any player in this league can easily make that up in 3 days. So first day, as long as you shoot a good score and you're at least within a couple shots of the leader, you got to probably feel pretty good about yourself.
Yes, you should. That's for sure. But yes, it's going to be, I think a lot of guys, you know, obviously when you have those, that's funny. When you look at that first day or sometimes the first 2 days, the leaderboard, you see all these guys up there you never heard of, you know, they've taken the lead in the tournament. So they get a little bit glory if they get off to a good start, but that puts a lot of pressure on those guys who have never, ever led in anything in an event, and then they're getting asked all these questions from the media, and this puts a lot of pressure on them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on them, and frankly, a lot of them can't even handle it. I mean, we saw last week, Jim Furyk, I mean, he collapsed on the last, he was leading the entire tournament, and then the last hole, he loses. On the last hole, a professional golfer that's, you know, he's won numerous, you know, tournaments and a couple majors, I believe. But, you know, so when you have the young guns that are, you know, guys that you've never heard of or maybe you have heard of but really, you know, aren't really consistent, you know, they tend to crumble. Nothing against them, but it's just golf is a very pressured sport. So there's a reason that most of the guys, I know Mickelson has kind of had a way, way off season, but you know, that's why most at the end of the day, come Sunday, most of the big names are usually close to the top.
Yeah, I know if I had a choice, you know, even when Tiger was in his heyday, I would always take the field. I said, just give me the field. Even though, you know, Tiger's got a good chance of winning, and a lot of people would take Tiger, but, you know, he won a lot of tournaments, but still, the field usually dominates, and usually somebody comes through from the field to win. And yes, he does well and wins well, but I would always take the field because I think it just gives yourself a better chance.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's 150 golfers out there, and it's one against 150. You have to look at it like that. Whoever you take, that's one person going against 150. I take a team sport, of course, and a team sport you might be saying one against 32 or something like that, or in baseball, one against 30 teams. In basketball, you know, you're dealing with a much lower number, another one in 30 in basketball, baseball, or football. But in golf, you got to go against 150 each and every week. And that makes it tough because you're talking about the 150 best golfers in the world.
Yeah. And golf, you know, 1 week you can be on, and the next week you can be completely off. So, you know, it's kind of hard to, it's not as easy to predict as maybe basketball or football, something like that. But, yeah, I mean, you're going against a lot of the best golfers in the world. Not in each tournament that you're in, because, you know, every player has, you know, plays in different tournaments. But, yeah, you're going against some of the best golfers in the world. And frankly, some of them that have won, you never know. They could catch fire that weekend, or they could completely plummet. We've seen that with Tiger. We've seen that with Mickelson. We've seen that with plenty of other players, too. So you never know.
Yeah, one player that I used to follow a lot, and he's really fallen off the face of the earth now, and you don't hardly hear of him anymore. But I really used to like David Duval. David Duval was a fine player for many years, but he had all that back trouble and back problems, and he's never been the same since he had all those operations. But David Duval was a very fine player for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's a name I haven't even heard in quite a while. You're right. Yeah, I remember that. You know, it's unfortunate, you know, that you put your, you know, heart and effort and time into a sport that you love,
yes,
that you're professional at, and then you have an injury that pretty much takes it away from you. But unfortunately, you know, that's how life is sometimes. So, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, and you talk about a golfer who basically threw his life away a lot, and that's John Daly. He started out pretty good. I saw, like, the first 6 or 7 holes, he was, like, one under par, a couple under par. I don't know where he is now. Where did John Daly
He actually finished pretty well. He's 4 under par.
Okay, well.
So you never know. There's another guy that could, he might win it.
He might, that's true. I hope he can string together. That would be nice if we could string together 4 days, because that the golf establishment, that would drive them crazy to see John Daly at the top of the leaderboard. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you all for calling. Invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons, call us up, and talk sports. You've been listening to radio station WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons, call us up, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Make sure you have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.